From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Outer Mission.
I live in the Nastro.
I live in the Mistro.
I'm in the sunny but filthy Mission.
Coming up, we'll talk to some Oaklanders who are using technology to make government information more accessible.
So people can see what's happening inside, that can grow to trust in government.
Then we hear from Oakland's first ever Chief Information Officer.
I struggle even with Twitter and LinkedIn as well. You know, I'll put up something that's meaningful, but I'm not constantly saying I just got my latte at Starbucks and I'm good to go.
And we hear how electronic beats are transforming traditional Mexican music.
Wow, you made me see my own genre in a whole new way, and it's super cool, and you can rediscover the music.
A whole new way to see things through tech today on Cross Currents. Picture this. You're driving down your street on your way to work or on your way home, and then the dreaded pothole. It can be a frustrating detail of daily life. And who has time to go to the city and file a report? Well, now you can report that pothole right from your phone, because there are apps for that, like See Click Fix. It's used to report things like illegal dumping, potholes, graffiti, you name it. In cities across the country, residents are leveraging data and design to develop applications that help government work better. KALW's Laura Flynn reports on one group of volunteers who meet weekly to get Oakland up to Wi-Fi high speed.
If you work in tech, these terms might mean something to you.
CSS.
GitHub.
JavaScript.
Django.
jQuery.
AWS.
Backbone.
EC2.
Marionette.
Linode.
If you don't work in tech, you might need a glossary.
Oh my god. Lots of acronyms. Socrata.
I think that's a whole word.
Is it a word?
I do, yeah. I think it's a company name.
It's a Tuesday evening in Oakland City Hall. A group of people ranging in age from 20s to 50s are sitting, many in front of their laptops. This is an open Oakland hacking meeting. Though a lot of jargon is thrown around, some of the people here have no tech backgrounds at all, like Anna Matai.
I just wanted to know more about Oakland politics, budget, just about government, and I just find this to be a good forum to, I think, help foster transparency and open government, but then also get plugged into, you know, what's happening where.
Open Oakland is designed to make civic hacking accessible and sustainable. Hacking, that is, in the sense of people working creatively and quickly to improve something. In this case, neighborhoods, cities, states, and the country. Steve Spiker is Open Oakland's executive director.
So we created this new organization to provide support for people who wanted to hack on city government, make government better, make democracy stronger, and people wanted to build things on a technology-centric focus to actually improve their city.
Since 2012, volunteers with Open Oakland have created several apps. There's the Adopt a Drain program, where residents can take charge of clearing their local storm drain. Open Beats, that helps people find their neighborhood crime prevention group. And Open Budget Oakland. A lot of what they're doing, Spiker says, is taking large data sets and making them much more accessible.
Because a data file with, say, a million records, no one from the public is going to be able to consume and understand that. What are the things that people really should know, and how do we convey that information to them in a way that's both meaningful and accessible, and in a way that actually looks good as well, isn't confusing and clunky?
Take Open Budget Oakland, one of the group's earlier projects. In 2012, the city released a 300-page budget document. 300 pages, that's a lot. Open Oakland hackers took the data and created a visual graphic to show how it works. So there's a list of revenue streams, some bigger, some smaller, that feed into things like a general fund. The different size streams come out into a list of expenses. It's just one page. The easy-to-read graphics were key for Helen Hutchinson with the League of Women Voters.
When you used to go and research about the city budget, you could get what were basic reports from the city, and they weren't nothing bad about them, but they weren't particularly accessible to people who didn't understand budgets. So the fact that now the basic raw data is available and people who have a lot more time to spend on it, can create more reports, only adds to that.
government has to be more open, more transparent and accessible so people can see what's happening inside, they can grow to trust in government.
Open Oakland Steve Spiker says it's not because the city is trying to be secretive. It's often just
bad technology and bad processes that limit government from being really transparent very frequently.
Some other organization, I think, in England.
Throughout the evening, more volunteers trickle into the hack meeting. Each partners up with a group working on a project. Miguel Vargas is searching a database for the 10 years of council members for an application he's developing.
I'm working on an app called Councilmatic, which is going to help people kind of keep track of new laws coming up, what their council member voted on, and also a place for the community to talk about different laws as they're being implemented in Oakland.
So if you're interested in a specific issue, the app would let you know when it's going to be discussed at a city council meeting. Another tool in development is called Open Disclosure. Director Steve Spiker says it will map campaign finance contributions.
To allow people to understand who's giving money to which campaign, where the money's coming from, where it's going to, so they'll actually be able to understand this at a local level for the very first time.
Open Oakland is part of a larger national network coordinated by Code for America. Residents coming together to deal with their city's issues using open data and technology. It's a way to reshape city government as an engaging and accessible entity. Arguably what it's supposed to be in the first place. In Oakland, I'm Laura Flynn for Cross Currents.
Find information about Open Oakland and its meetups at klw.org. Click on Cross Currents. And tell us about your own tech meetups on Twitter at KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Groups like Open Oakland want to help improve digital efficiency in their city, and now a new government office is joining that effort. This past January, Brian Sostokis became Oakland's first Chief Information Officer, or CIO. He's held the role in two cities previously, most recently Modesto. He oversees all things tech in city government, including things like figuring out how technology can solve communication breakdowns between residents and City Hall, or within the network of city departments. Overall, how to communicate better. Sostokis stopped by KALW and spoke with executive editor Ben Trefney, who asked him whether he thought Oakland's government uses technology well or poorly.
I wouldn't say it was well, and I wouldn't say it was poorly. I think it was more disjointed. At the time, Oakland's somewhat siloed. There are technologies that are in specific departments, and a lot of times that data, that information isn't shared, even though there might be a value between, let's say, watering parks and crime statistics. It might seem that it's odd, but you could schedule watering a park if there's a high frequency of crime in the evening, and maybe you water the park at that time to prevent people from being present there. So there's synergies that's there that might not be analyzed or collected to try to provide something with relatively low cost.
Well, that seems like a remarkable amount of data that would need to be processed then. I mean, that really does make sense what you're talking about with like watering the criminals. But, I mean, how do you process all that data in a way that's going to benefit the people of Oakland?
Sure. And that's why we come up with certain data sets. There are certain things that we try to engage within the community, such as Code for America or Open Oakland are two of the biggest avenues of, I'll call it, civic innovation that we currently have in Oakland. They have this community base that is extremely tech savvy and want to help better the community and better government. And that's a nice synergy and nexus that some governments don't have. They will look at data or they will see technology in a different sense rather than from what maybe a building planner or a financial officer, an accountant sees that data. They can maybe see more of its applicability to the community. And that's my role, to bridge those two, to try to find something useful and meaningful, not just something we just develop and isn't really useful.
So to bring this to extremely relatable terms, maybe, Are you sort of the tech guy then for the city of Oakland? Whereas if it were someplace else, like a department says, hey, we got to get tech on this to figure out, like, for example, maybe the chief of police and the chief of the fire department say, you know, we want to make something where there's just an app that's going to access 911 for our for the people in Oakland. So that's really easy for them to get help right away. We want an app for that, Brian. Can you make that happen?
Yes. That's what we do. We would have that engagement. We would discuss what needs to be done, and that would then come over to my department, and then we would engage, and whether it's internally, externally, and how we get that done to deliver that program.
But do you say to them, well, I'm a one-man department, and I just got 18 requests that are like this, and I'm going to try to get my volunteers involved with this, so it's going to be a little while.
Well, I have a staff. I mean, I have a whole department that's there where it's not just solely me, but projects are prioritized, and that's mainly due to funding and staffing and so forth. But that doesn't mean that certain initiatives are said no to or pushed back. They're just prioritized. What is the direction from the council that year? They usually set forth, they're the policy directors. So they set forth the policy. And when public safety is an initiative that they want better response times, then that's when the public safety department heads, the police chief and fire chief, say, Brian, we need better technology in order to improve these response times. And then we go out to provide that solution to them and hopefully improve response times.
That's Brian Sestokas. He is the Chief Information Officer for the City of Oakland. Speaking about the police department, they've had some issues with radio and internal communication technologies. What can you do to help them with that?
Sure. In fact, right now we're engaging in an exploratory idea of what do we want to do with our radio system. We have East Bay Regional Communication that is there, which is a joint powers authority of a lot of other agencies that are around the East Bay that provide radio services to each other.
And just for background, we're talking about a lot of different radio communications that don't really communicate with each other so directly. And this has been a historic problem.
Correct. And that's part of the engagement. How do we engage, for example, the port or other areas where we are the first responders there, but they might be on a separate radio system or their communication to us isn't there. That's an initiative that we are currently engaging even on right now as you speak, and we're hoping to have a recommendation within, I would say, the next 3 to 4 months on how we need to proceed in order to improve that environment.
Has Mayor Kwan ever said, hey, Brian, the software just crashed my computer. Can you help me fix this thing?
I do sometimes get personal calls from my VIPs to fix things. It's fun. And yes, that happens mainly around email. Email is such a critical component. I am honestly impressed of the amount of conversations and email that this elected body receives here in Oakland. It's way more than I have seen in other agencies, private included. And I think that's probably the testament of their ability wanting to communicate to the public. But there's immense amounts of conversations that they try to have. So yes, we do get personal requests to fix things.
What would you suggest for people who are overwhelmed by email? This is just since this is within your industry and you're talking about streamlining, I mean, we're all overwhelmed with email. How do you deal with that?
I tend to go on an email hiatus. This is just me. There's so much mail. I usually try to see what's there and get through a bunch of it in the morning and look, but then I pull away from it. I try not to conduct business within email only due to the nature that sometimes it can get misconstrued on what you want. Sometimes it's hard. And even as a technologist, I like that personal engagement. I really want to have that. To me, email is transitory and it's there. We have that conversation and it's done. But then we got to have that engagement. And I try not to live in it. I struggle even with Twitter and LinkedIn as well. There, you know, I'll put up something that's meaningful, but I'm not constantly saying I just got my latte at Starbucks and I'm good to go.
Do you like to use emoticons?
I try not to, but every now and then it depends if my kids are texting me or something, I will. But usually not. It depends. My kids come up with some really creative ones, though.
Oh, I'm sure they're way better at this than we are. Even though you're the chief information officer, they're the deputy chief.
I don't know if they'll ever know how to type. That's my fear.
Oh, right. Yeah, good point. Yeah. That's Brian Sestokas. He is the chief information officer for the City of Oakland. So why are you working in government rather than in the private sector at this point? I mean, we're obviously surrounded by a mass by immense wealth here in the Bay Area that is really being driven by the tech sector. And mm-hmm. and here you're working in a government position, which no doubt could be less lucrative than what you could be getting.
And that's true, but it's, in my opinion, more rewarding. And I say that because I did work in the private sector. I came from there. Most technologists do. But working when I started when my family was growing and we were there, seeing that my efforts contributed to a new soccer park or something that was there because we made things more efficient or we established something that allows the buses to run more smoothly. I see that. It's almost like instant gratification, and I get to see that engagement. It comes with good and bad. You know, I'll get things, why are you doing this? You should be doing this. And there's always opinions on how to do things. But when we do something right and we have that engagement, it's great. I mean, it's something that's what keeps me motivated. And Oakland has a lot of that civic pride and engagement. There's a renaissance, I think, happening there. And I hope to be part of that, to bring that to light and say, hey, if Oakland can do it and we've done this, then, you know, every other organization should be able to succeed and do this as well.
That's Brian Sestokas, Oakland's first chief information officer. He spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. So what ideas do you have for improving communication between you and your local government? Tell us on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Here in the Bay Area, we're experiencing some big cultural shifts. We just heard about a few ways that technology is reshaping the way we live and how we interact with our cities. It can change places and institutions that have been around for a long time. And sometimes it's a change you can hear. You might have heard the 1958 Ritchie Valens song, La Bamba. Okay, what you might not know is that this song comes from a traditional Mexican musical genre, the son jarocho. Right now, that genre is being transformed yet again, inspired in part by a San Francisco musician who's using technology to blend the very old with the very new. KALW's Julie Kane brings us the story.
Hector Heckdog Perez sits at a control panel that looks a little like it belongs at NASA headquarters. But instead of launching a rocket, he's setting off a bomb, Sistema Bomb. Sistema Bomb is a music project, and Perez is its creator. He's bringing an electronic sensibility to the traditional form of Mexican music called son jarocho.
Son jarocho is a genre that comes from the region of Veracruz, which is a state in Mexico. It's a genre that has evolved over a few hundred years, but has its roots in African, Spanish, and indigenous music.
The city of Veracruz is one of the oldest ports in the Americas. It's where Hernan Cortes first landed on his conquest of Mexico back in the 1500s, and it became a gateway for slavery and colonization and trade.
It's a lot like the what New Orleans is here, because it's a port city. As tends to happen when you have a mixture of cultures, the histories are combined in the way people dress, the way they speak, in the poetry and in the food and in the music.
Mm-hmm. first heard the music as a kid growing up in South LA.
My parents are from Jalisco. I grew up listening to cumbia as well as son jarocho, as well as hip-hop, as well as reggae, classical music and jazz.
But as he got older, his interest shifted. He studied electronic music at UC Berkeley, went on to a gig at A&M Records, and founded his own production company, Music Orange. He makes music for commercial clients like Apple, Sony, and Yahoo. But it was a Los Lobos song, La Guacamaya, that took him back to his roots.
Pobrecita guacamaya, ay, que lástima me das, que lástima me das, pobrecita guacamaya.
Se acabaron las petallas, ahora sí que comerá. Pobrecita guacamaya, ay, que lástima me das.
When I heard that song, that requinto that David Hidalgo was playing, I just wanted to know what that was.
The requinto is a melodic guitar, one of Son Jarocho's central instruments. And the sound of that guitar took Perez on a musical journey. It inspired him to blend tradition with technology and led to the creation of Sistema Bomb's first album, Electro Jarocho, a groundbreaking record that got nominated for a Grammy in 2013.
So this is the first layer we did with these percussion sounds.
Perez is mixing a track for Sistema Bomb's second album, due out later this year. It's a traditional song called El Camotal, performed by the veteran Son Jarocho band Mono Blanco. The Sistema Bomb version also features Afro-Latin jazz percussionist John Santos and Ozomatli's Azdru Sierra. But it's Perez's electronic palette that brings it to life.
This is where it starts becoming my thing. When I start adding these elements to it, and then elements like which has no place on a Son Jarocho record, yeah. But once I add that, then that's when I pick up momentum, and it's now defined. Like this piece to me is now a Sistema Bomb piece.
It may be a Sistema Bomb piece, but is it still Son Jarocho?
The audience for traditional Son Jarocho is limited, I think.
Marco Villalobos spent time in the studio during the making of Sistema Bomb's first record. He's producing a documentary film called Beyond La Bamba about Son Jarocho's roots. He says he's hopeful that Sistema Bomb will bring new audiences to what is still a vibrant traditional music.
If you can trace that back to where it comes from, which is a traditional acoustic raw Son Jarocho from the campos of Veracruz, and I think that's even better.
Returning to that acoustic raw sound is part of what draws Hector Perez and his audiences to the music in the first place.
The one thing that I found surprising was there's a lot of interest in Mexico, especially outside of Veracruz, because as one guy explained to me, Son Jarocho to Mexicans is a national treasure. It's like the mariachi. It's very universally loved. It's deep part of their culture, but it's not viewed as something that you would necessarily seek out and listen to and, you know, turn on the radio. And so for those people, the Sistema Bomb became a new way, a new lens for them to celebrate their own music. And what was surprising is that it was done by someone outside of Mexico. And so I've gotten so many comments by that, like, that, you know, where they were saying, wow, you know, you made me see my own genre in a whole new way, and it's super cool, and, you know, and you can rediscover the music.
For Perez, that rediscovery is at the heart of the Sistema Bomb sound.
The intent was not to modernize the genre as if I felt the genre is caught in some, you know, Stone Age state. It was simply a celebration of the genre through my lens.
He says it's a lens that brings audiences, new and old, to a sound that's been there all along. In San Francisco, I'm Julie Kane for Cross Currents.
Find out where you can hear more music from Hector Perez and Sistema Bomb at klw.org. Click Cross Currents.
La
And that's all for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes David Boyer, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Jasmine Lopez, Liz Pfeffer, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Mary Willis. Today's show was produced by Audrey Dilling and engineered by Chris Hoff. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll meet some people still coping with the aftermath of the Iraq War.
I expect him to be extremely angry, but he never showed any anger so far. He probably was angry years ago. Not now.
The Ripples of War, 11 Years Later. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. These are the Tumbleweed Wanderers from Oakland. They'll be performing at the Fox Theater in their hometown this Friday night. Details are at KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Spending my days gone from home. It's a life I really ought to know. Wait.